In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives. Amen. It's good to be back. I've spent the last week, I was on spiritual retreat, actually, in the Washington coast, off the Olympic coast. There's a difference between being on vacation and going on a spiritual retreat. I was on vacation in the beginning of August, and I went to Colorado, and I went to see my family, and I hung out, and I even did some backpacking. But the point of a vacation is to get away and not work and not think about work and just to kind of replenish yourself that way. And so that's what I did. My spiritual retreat was different. I did backpack. There's a place on the Washington coast that I've been to before. There's a trail, and I backpacked out there, and I set up camp, and I stayed there for 6 days and 5 nights, and I brought some books on ministry, and I brought a Bible, and I sat there, and I read, and I prayed, and I watched the waves. And as a way of preparing for this new year, and, you know, as I prayed, I thought about each of you, actually. I had your face in my mind, and I held you up to God's blessing in your life. I prayed about the ministries of St. Lawrence, about greeters and sides people and altar guild and the music team and issues and actions and the prayer group, and, you know, prayed about those and prayed about our ministry for the next year. Prayed about my life and my role as a priest. So a spiritual retreat is a time to kind of get away and prepare and think about and kind of retreat, but also kind of for this year ahead. So that's actually what I was doing last week. I wasn't on vacation because I was thinking very deeply about St. Lawrence, thinking very deeply about you and our work, our life together in this community. It was a kind of Sabbath for me. It's taken me a while. When I was a kid, I grew up among Lutherans who didn't have a lot of, you know, wanted to downplay the meaning of Jewish religious practices, and so they kind of thought Sabbath was bad, and it's like Jesus came to save us from the Sabbath. You know, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, was almost how it was. And I think they were wrong in that. As I've grown older and begun to think about what is Sabbath, and the importance of role. And within Judaism, it comes from the very beginning. You know, in the beginning, God creates, and God says, let there be, and it is good. And there's this whole process, you know, and there are 6 days in the Genesis account where God creates, and then on the seventh day, God rests. And God doesn't simply rest. There's this sense that what God does is God's done all this work to create this good thing, and so on the seventh day, God sits back and delights in it, and enjoys it, and appreciates its beauty. Like there's this deep sense that something happens on that seventh day, that after all the beauty of creation and the glory of it, right before it, God sits back and delights in it and loves it. That's Sabbath. And it was so important within Jewish theology that they're like, no, this is a spiritual practice, that this is something we should do. We should take a day where we should just delight in the goodness of our lives, delight in the goodness of our communities, delight in the goodness of God. And that we need that for our souls. We need it for our very being. And so it becomes one of the central practices of Judaism, that this is a thing we do. And we used to do it in the West, in Christianity. I mean, used to be you couldn't shop on Sundays, right? You couldn't buy liquor on Sundays. I remember reading, you know, these books about 18th century, 19th century writers when they're kids, right? Just how awful Sundays were because you couldn't do anything on Sundays. It seems like you couldn't have fun on Sundays. I think it was Mark Twain that I was reading that was like, hated the Sabbath, which was boring as a kid. And so we don't have Sabbath anymore. We don't have it. And, you know, I appreciate being able to buy things on Sundays, don't get me wrong. But have we lost something? I guess for me, it's a question of what have we lost in that? You know, I was thinking about Sabbath because of the readings, both last Sunday and this Sunday. And you may remember last Sunday's reading, you know, Jesus is teaching in the synagogue, and there's this woman who comes over, and she's hunched over, right? And she's been, like, frozen. Her body has been frozen for 18 years in kind of this crippled position. And Jesus is teaching, and you know, he decides, hey, woman, be free of your ailment. Luke says she had a spirit that was somehow oppressing her. There was a spirit or an energy. It's not specific what it is. It's like something. And Jesus says, be free of your ailment. And she stands up straight. She walks away. And then the leader of the synagogue gets really mad. He's like, aren't there 6 other days you can heal? Why are you healing on the Sabbath? You shouldn't be healing on the Sabbath. And Jesus is like, really? You don't get it. Of course you should be healing on the Sabbath. You have an ox, and even on the Sabbath, your cattle need water. You bring them the water. Shouldn't this daughter of Abraham, who is thirsty for freedom, who's been, you know, kind of crippled by the accuser, Jesus says Satan has held her bound. It's the accuser, this accusing voice that has kept her frozen in this crippled position. Shouldn't she be made free on the Sabbath? So that was last week, and that's chapter 13 of Luke. This week we get to chapter 14 of Luke. And the lectionary was going to leave out another healing on the Sabbath. And I'm like, you can't do that because you can't understand the parables unless you understand the healing. And this time Jesus is at dinner with the Pharisees. So, you know, what's curious to me is that, you know, everybody thinks that Jesus was opposed to the Pharisees, but, you know, there's lots of instances where Jesus is actually hanging out with the Pharisees quite a bit. Like in today's reading, they invite him to dinner. They invite him to a Sabbath dinner, the leader of the Pharisees. So Jesus is actually hanging out with the Pharisees. And he goes to this dinner at, you know, the Pharisees' house. He obviously had an invite. They kind of recognize him as an important teacher and rabbi in the community. And it's a who's who of who matters in that community. Right? It's all the important people. It's all the lawyers and the scribes, right? And the very important people who are all here on the Sabbath kind of jockeying for position and trying to figure out, you know, their place at the table because status matters. Mattered in the ancient world, it matters today, you know. I mean, it seems to be that we're configured that way, that where we fit in the hierarchy things and how important we are, you know, these kinds of things seem to be human preoccupations. And so here are these Pharisees and lawyers, that's what they were doing. They're kind of figuring out, okay, here's the table, and, you know, apparently they didn't have placards. This is the advantage of placards. You can tell people where to go. Right, at wedding banquets or whatever. That way they don't have to jockey, but now you gotta figure out, oh, okay, how important am I? Am I important enough to sit next to the bride and groom, or are you not important enough to sit? You know, where do I sit? I mean, these things play out in our lives in various ways, but he's seeing them jockeying for position, and I'm sure there were moments where somebody sat down and then somebody else more important came, and so they had to move over, and that person, you know, sat down, but, you know, and just bumped, and it's a who's who. Like, these are all the important people. These are the people who, you know, you invite them over to your house and then they're obligated to invite you over to their house. There's this social reciprocity that has to happen. You do something nice for them, they're going to do something nice for you. The Chinese call it guanxi. You know, it's not just in our culture, but it's all kinds of cultures. There's that sense of reciprocity. So Jesus is observing all of this, and there's also a tension in the air. Because they know it's the Sabbath. And they know Jesus tends to do things that are unorthodox on the Sabbath. And so he's sitting there at dinner, and there's a man with dropsy, which I had to look up on the internet. You know, it's extra water in your blood. I mean, this kind of swelling of the body. All right, here's this guy who's got some sort of, you know, swelling going on in his body, and they're all like, what are you going to do? Like, they're sitting there watching him. They have their own spirit. They have their own spirit that cripples them. Because they're sitting there, okay, what's he going to do? Is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? And of course, Jesus does it. He heals the man with dropsy, and they're silent, and they don't say anything. And who knows what's going on? I mean, the sense of, you know, contempt or the sense of outrage or the sense of, whoa, you've just done something you shouldn't be doing. And Jesus says, look, if you have a child or if you have an ox and they fall into a well, won't you take them out of the well on the Sabbath? You guys just don't get it. The Sabbath is about setting people free. It's about our freedom. And so then Jesus tells them these two parables. He says, okay, I've just been watching you all jockey for position at this thing. I've been watching you all. You're all so frozen in your own anxiety about your social status. It's crippling you. He's like, don't play that game. How about if you don't do that anymore? How about if you liberate yourself and instead of like trying to figure out where you fit in the social order of things, what happens if you just say, well, I'm not going to play that game. I'm just going to sit way down here at the bottom of the pecking order. And Jesus says, yeah, do that, because then you get, then rather than you having to determine, somebody can say, hey, no, I want you to come up here. You're important to me. I value you. I want you to come up here. He's inverting their paradigm. He's like, don't choose the position of honor. Choose the lowest place. You know, and he's kind of subverting what's going on there. In the next parable, he says, well, okay. And when you throw a banquet like this, when you throw a dinner, don't invite people who are going to be able to reciprocate. Invite the poor. Invite the lame. Invite the blind. Invite all the people who aren't here at this Sabbath dinner tonight and see what that does for you. See how that sets you free from the things that cripple you, from the fear and the anxiety. Jesus is about healing on the Sabbath. Because he knows that Sabbath is about freedom. These guys have lost any kind of context of what it means to be able to rest and delight in the goodness of being the people of God, of the delight in the goodness of God's good creation, delight in the goodness, and grow into who they are as spiritual beings in this world. So that's why it matters. I mean, we live in a world today that gosh, I think we need Sabbath. I mean, I think if Jesus came back today, I don't think he would be saying, oh, you guys are too rigid about Sundays, or, you know, I don't think you're too rigid about the Sabbath. You need to lighten up. We've lightened up. We got the message. We lightened up, and then we went to the other extreme, and now Jesus is like, oh, you guys might want to think about not using your smartphone for a 24-hour period, or you might want to think about not shopping for a 24-hour period or whatever. And I don't know what that looks like in our lives. You know, I'm not necessarily advocating going back to blue laws or, you know, no shopping on for a period of time, but I do know that actually there's a social justice component to that. I mean, the working poor in North America who are trying to string together a living by working two, sometimes three part-time jobs because there are no full-time jobs that pay them enough anymore. They can't get full-time jobs. So they're working their butts off. They're working two or three different positions that are spread out, and a lot of them are often service economy jobs, which require that they work on the weekends, which require they work on holidays, so the rest of us can buy stuff on the weekends or buy stuff on the holidays. These folks never get a holiday because they're part-time. They don't get vacations. They don't get paid holidays. They never get a Sabbath. That's a social justice issue. They don't get to experience that freedom, that opportunity just to step back and delight, you know, in God's good creation, to take that time to do it. And we all need it. And that's my point. I think we need it, and I think we've lost sight of it. So, I'm thinking a lot about Sabbath. I think that as a spiritual practice, it's worth us considering more deeply. I mean, this is part of the heritage that we've inherited, is the sense that, no, actually, it is good to set aside a time, a period of time, to genuinely simply be human, to step deeper into who we are as spiritual beings, to delight in the goodness of God and the goodness of God's love in our lives, the goodness of our family, the goodness of our community. I invite us to consider Sabbath. Amen.